This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. A generation ago, it was television that was blamed for distracting children from reading books. Now, it's not only the TV, but tablets and computers and other electronic devices. Despite these distractions, Jim Trelease maintains every child can become an avid reader. He'll discuss the benefits, rewards, and importance of reading aloud to a new generation of children in the digital age later on Cincinnati Edition. First, feeling productive but not creative? Well, you are not alone. Only one in four people around the world feel they're living up to their creative potential. And a Cincinnati man has set out to teach you how to instill practices in your life to make your work more fulfilling. Todd Henry is the founder and CEO of the consulting firm Accidental Creative and author of the new book, Die Empty, Unleash Your Best Work Every Day. He's joining me in the studio this afternoon to take your calls and questions. You can be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk@wvxu.org, posting on Facebook, or tweeting at 917WVXU. Thanks for being on Cincinnati Edition, Todd.
Mark, thanks for having me.
What a title, Die Empty. Now, a lot of folks might take that in a negative sense, but really you mean it in a very positive sense.
I do. Yeah, it definitely conjures up images of lollipops and rainbows, right? Die Empty. Well, this title was sparked by an incident that occurred about a decade now ago in my life, where I was in a meeting and a friend asked kind of an out-of-the-blue question. He said, what do you think is the most valuable land in the world? And, you know, of course, we're all guessing, I don't know, gold mines of South Africa, oil fields of the Middle East. We're throwing out all these guesses. And he said, no, I think the most valuable land in the world is actually the graveyard, because in the graveyard are buried all of the unwritten novels, all of the unlaunched businesses, all of the unreconciled relationships, all of the things that people said, I'm going to get around to that tomorrow. I'll do that tomorrow. And as we all know, you know, we have a limited number of days on this earth. And one day their tomorrows ran out and they took all of that value to the grave with them. And it was buried with them in the ground. And I determined that day, I said, I am not going to allow that to be me. And I'm not going to allow that to be the people I work with. And so I wrote these two words, die empty, right? And put them in a notebook, put them on the wall of my office. They kind of have been the defining ethic of my life for the last decade. And many others who were there that day as well. I know it was really impactful for them as well. Because I want to make sure that at the end of my life, I can point to a body of work and say, yes, that represents me. I did not take my best work to my grave with me. Instead, I was purposeful about getting it out each and every day.
The big battle, though, is each and every day we have work that needs to be done,
That's right.
To be done. And we get swept up, you know, into, well, as you say in the beginning of the book, mediocrity. We get swept into the mediocrity, and I can always do that tomorrow. Just like you said, I can always do that tomorrow, but then, you know, tomorrow comes, you're still not getting it done. How do you feel that cycle can be broken? Because people slip into it quickly and easily.
Absolutely. And that word mediocrity is very interesting. And I share this in the book, that it comes from two words in the original language, medius, which means middle, and ochreous, which means rugged mountain. So to be mediocre literally means to stop halfway up a rugged mountain, to stop halfway to your objective. And so when you think of it that way, there's something I want to do. There's a place I want to go. But at some point, I'm going to choose to settle in. I'm going to choose to compromise. That can happen in a lot of different ways. There are many forces that come against us that cause us to settle halfway. And sometimes it happens in subtle ways that we're not aware of. And then, you know, a couple of days, weeks, months pass, and we realize I'm actually pretty far from where I intended to be.
And I was surprised and, well, it kind of opened my eyes a little bit that sometimes it's success that can be the downside. There is a downside to success where, well, all of a sudden, you're not quite being as satisfied as you thought you were.
That's exactly right. And I think success can be the harbinger of complacency, because we experience success. And what's the first thing that we are biologically hardwired to do when we experience success? We're biologically hardwired to replicate the circumstances that led to that success. And so we fossilize around practices. We fossilize around the way that we see the world, the wells that we go back to for inspiration. And we become so fixed on the process that we ignore the place that we want to go. And so as we become fossilized, we become more and more rigid, less able to look in the places where real value might reside, the creative ideas reside. The creative process is the the perpetual assault on the beachhead of apathy. It's pushing against those fossilized practices and saying, I'm not going to settle in. I'm not going to allow success to be the harbinger of complacency. Instead, I'm going to constantly reinvent the way that I approach my work. I'm going to constantly find fresh and new ways to find inspiration in my work so that I don't become fossilized and complacent.
And it's a little bit of it's doing the same thing every day. Yeah, you know, a little bit, you're doing the same thing every day, and that kind of gets you complacent about things. So how does creativity enter it?
Well, and I think that's one of the misunderstandings that we have about creativity is that we think it is about wide open planes. Oh, if they would just let me have wide open planes, everything would take care of itself. And that's, I believe, a dangerous misunderstanding. I think that creativity and freedom are on one side of a two-sided coin. The other side is structure. You know, Orson Welles said that the absence of limitation is the enemy of art, meaning that we need some limitation in our life. We need some practices, some systems in our life that are predictable, that are rhythmic, so that we can be wild and pursue those wide open planes in the midst of our work. But we have something to keep us grounded, to keep us focused on what matters. And so we have to have some degree of structure if we really want to get to the true creative value we have to offer.
I'm speaking with Todd Henry, the author of Die Empty, Unleash Your Best Work Every Day. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 here on Cincinnati Edition. And we'll talk about some of the defining principles of Die Empty. Define your battles. This
yes.
was a big one that I found because really this is kind of how you begin to make that transformation.
That's right. One of the forces that I talked about in the book that lead to mediocrity and stagnancy is aimlessness. It's a lack of understanding the battles that you're really fighting. We will ultimately be known and remembered for the battles that we choose to spend our time fighting. That's what we will be known for. But many of us haven't taken the time to define those battles. And so we talk about things like follow your passion, you know, find your passion. I mean, this is the mantra, especially of the younger generation. Find your passion. You will never work a day in your life. You know, these kinds of things are said.
Yes.
But we fail to realize that word passion, in the root word, means it comes from the root word that means to suffer. So what we have to do is ask ourselves, what work am I willing to suffer on behalf of? What work keeps me engaged long after others have given up? What keeps me pushing up the mountain? Once we tap into that source of productive passion, we identify those battles that we say, hey, not on my watch. These battles are going to be won. I am not going to lose a battle on my watch in this area. Once we identify those battles, we can begin structuring our life, setting goals around those things, making sure that we're applying that to the work in front of us. The other misunderstanding is that we think that somewhere out there is the ideal job. Somewhere out there is the perfect, you know, opportunity for me to apply my passion, rather than saying, no, how can I tap into that productive passion, that thing I'm willing to suffer for, and then apply it to whatever is in front of me? And then I notice, I observe what I'm actually good at, and then I can redirect from there. Instead of waiting for some opportunity to come along to solve all of my problems, I need to start internally saying, how do I reorient my life? And then as I act, I will notice patterns, I'll begin to redirect and get to a place closer, I think, to my productive passion.
Oh, but Todd, it's so hard. I have to get all this stuff done. How do I take the time to define my battles and, you know, take that, you know, make those changes?
Well, and that's the problem, right? The problem is that we're all very busy. Most of us have figure it out jobs. We have jobs where we have to go to work every day and solve problems or solve other people's problems, right? And so we're trying to figure it out. We're creative professionals, but that raises all kinds of questions like what kind of value and am I contributing the right kind of value? And all these things. We're very busy trying to figure these things out, but we're not stopping to build practices and disciplines into our life to ground us, to help us ask questions about, you know, am I becoming aimless? Do I know what I'm doing today? Am I among the busily bored? People who are very mentally active, but I'm not asking deeper questions that are allowing me to pursue my curiosity. Am I allowing my comfort zone to encroach on my activity? In other words, am I staying squarely in the middle, in the place of comfort for me, where I'm biologically wired to want to stay? Or am I strategically stepping out of my comfort zone? You know, I think the love of comfort is often the enemy of greatness in our life. We hover close to the middle instead of taking small strategic steps or setting little step goals to push us out of our comfort zone every day. And so I think if we're purposeful, Mark, about asking on a daily basis questions in those areas to make sure that we're not falling prey over time to those forces, I think we'll be far better positioned to continue making a contribution and ultimately, day by day, building a body of work that we can point to with pride.
Well, you talk about what Die Empty is, or we just talked about it, but I also found it interesting where you define what Die Empty is not. So why don't you share what Die Empty is not?
That's right. Well, I think one of the dangers that we could also fall into is thinking when I say Die Empty, I mean, you know, collapse over the finish line, gasping, you know, barely right. alive, but I made it. That's not at all what I'm talking about. You know, when we talk about work, when we talk about contributing, any place we add value in our life is work. So that includes our family. That includes how we treat the barista at Starbucks. That includes, you know, how we spend our money. All of these things are part of that body of work. And so we have to be mindful of not just putting ourselves fully into our job thinking, oh, my job is my body of work. It's not. There's a Japanese term, karoshi, which means death from overwork. And this has been sort of a rising trend in Japanese culture for the last several decades of people literally, because of the instilled work ethic, you know, literally working themselves to the point of death. And that is not by any means what I'm talking about. What I mean is bringing the fullness of who you are every day to the work that's in front of you so that every day you're getting those important activities. You're moving the needle on the things that matter to you, right? So that you're not carrying that brilliant work inside of you into the future and then hoping that someday you'll get around to it. Instead, you're making purposeful decisions every day to act on what matters so that you're bringing that value into the world.
Well, some of this is very difficult to overcome. I think I was speaking with the author, Craig Johnson, the author of the Longmire detective series, and he was saying, you know, I came to writing late because I had this internal editor. And many people have that internal editor who are saying, oh, no, somebody won't like that story.
Yes.
You know, what advice do you have to overcome, you know, say, that obstructionist that could be in your mind from making these changes?
Yeah, progress is the antidote to the internal editor. As you make progress on your work, you notice that editorial voice becomes quieter and quieter. You know, I think it was Kierkegaard who said, decisions part the fog on stagnant waters. Cowardice kills us. When we act decisively, it's funny how fear tends to go away. It tends to dissipate because as we act, we start to notice, wow, okay, the perceived consequences that were in my mind are not necessarily as great as the actual consequences of failure. But sometimes we artificially escalate those perceived consequences of failure to the point that we don't act. So decisive action, little steps, baby steps. Nobody sits down to write a book. Nobody sits down to start a company. I mean, it doesn't happen in one sitting where you say, oh, I'm going to get down. I'm going to put one big effort into it. It's going to be done. No, it's the result of a lot of small daily deltas, small daily changes, the willingness to overcome and disintermediate that fear. You know, I believe that a lot of times, I mentioned earlier, the love of comfort is the enemy of greatness. Mm-hmm. Those who do great work over time are those who choose to do the right thing, even when it's the uncomfortable thing. And for most of us, that means sitting down and doing that uncomfortable work every day, even if it means I'm going to write 500 words today on a book that I may not like at the end of the day. I'm going to choose to do it anyway. Because the other dirty little secret, Mark, is that we are terrible judges of the quality of our own work. And I see this all the time. People will produce something brilliant and they're saying, oh, this is terrible. I don't like it. It's not as good as something I did, you know, last week. And that expectation escalation creeps into our lives. We're terrible judges. We're not responsible for the quality of what we do today all the time. Instead, sometimes our only duty is to show up, to get the work done, to pour ourselves into it. And then over time, I believe the quality takes care of itself if you show up enough times in a row.
Todd Henry, author of Die Empty, Unleash Your Best Work Every Day. He'll be appearing at the Madison Event Center in Covington tomorrow morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. as part of the Joseph Beth Business Lecture Series. Details about the event at wvxu.org. If you have a question or comment for Todd, you can call 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, post on Facebook, or tweet us your questions or comments. And you talk about in at the very beginning of the book about how to read this book, Die Empty, and how some sections may resonate with some people more than others. Is it possible to practice just some of the aspects of Die Empty, or is it important to take it as a whole?
Well, I think it... it's certainly better to read the parts that resonate the most with you and apply them than not to read anything because you feel like you have to read the whole thing, right?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I think that there are certain of these forces that I talk about in the book, aimlessness, boredom, comfort, delusion, ego, fear, and guardedness. I call them the seven deadly sins, right?
Right.
I think there are certain of those that when people see the title of the chapter, they say, oh, that's me. You know, fear is taking hold of my life. Or, oh, you know, I have let ego creep in and cause me to become inflexible. Or, oh, I am among the busily bored. I'm very busy. I'm active. I've got a lot going on, but I'm not asking the deeper questions that are allowing me to stoke the fire of my curiosity. So I think there are certain chapters that people resonate with more than others. And would I say that you must apply all of these and or you will not create a good body? No, of course not, right? But I do think that it's important, though, not to ignore any of them, because any of them can creep into your life over time and cause the kind of stagnancy that we don't want to see.
Talk about the three types of work. I found this very interesting when reading the book. Mapping, making, and meshing.
Yeah. So when we think of work, we tend to think of the first two. We think of mapping and making. So mapping is planning your work. It's all the work before the work. It's the strategy. It's making your to-do list. It's all of those things that most of us do if we have figure-it-out jobs, if we're creative professionals, right? Making is actually sitting down to do the work. It's checking tasks off your list. And for most of us, it's the stuff that we're paid to do. Like, you're paid for what you're doing right now, for hosting, the value you're creating. But there was a lot of mapping that had to go into this. You had to plan it. There's a lot of strategy involved, right? So we tend to think of work as those two things. But there's a third kind of work that we often ignore, and I call it meshing. And meshing is all of the work between the work. It's what prepares you to be able to perform at a moment's notice, to be brilliant when it counts most. It's doing things like developing your skills, pursuing your curiosity, having study time in your life where you're absorbing stimuli that are challenging you and causing you to think in new ways about the world. The seeds of tomorrow's brilliance are planted in the soil of today's activity. And that's what meshing is. It's the activity that develops you and sort of holds all of it together and allows you to be able to spot opportunities when they come. When you're only mapping and making, a lot of times you're head down, your nose down, you're getting the work done, you're cranking away, you're getting it done, but you're ignoring all of the context of the work because you're not meshing, you're not asking questions, you're not developing your skills, you're not creating unnecessarily in your life, you're only doing things on demand. And so as a result, a lot of times you veer off course. Even though you're making really great progress, you're making really great progress in the wrong direction because you're not stepping back to look at the context of your work.
You know, part of this is hinging on, and you have, you know, parts of the book, knowing yourself. And that's something people aren't always comfortable with, because it's not only acknowledging what you're good at, but maybe what your weaknesses are as well. You have to acknowledge those weaknesses. And that, again, can go back to that internal editor or that obstructionist that's in your mind to keep you from doing things. Is this, you know, die empty for anyone and everyone? Or do you think only some people have the ability to deal?
No, I think that we all have not only the ability, but the responsibility to know ourselves. I think the responsibility to know what we bring to the table and to not try to live out someone else's narrative, to not try to live out a narrative that's been handed to us. You know, there are people who want to be a certain kind of person, but they're not equipped to be that kind of person. There is something they could contribute that no one else could ever contribute because of their unique passions, skills, and experiences. They are perfectly capable of doing that, but they're not doing it because they're trying to be something else. They're living out a false narrative. They're living according to a narrative handed to them at some point. And so I think, you know, we have the responsibility because of the sphere of influence we've been given to know ourselves, to know our abilities, and to operate in that sphere of influence with the fullness of who we are, not the fullness of who someone else wants us to be. I think Viktor Frankl said the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast should be accompanied by the Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast, right? This idea
yes.
that when we have freedom and liberty, we also have responsibility. And so even though we have lots of freedom to engage our work however we choose to engage it, I believe we have a responsibility to plumb the depths of who we are, to know who we are, and then to extract that and bring it to our work every day so that we can make the contribution that we're capable of making.
One thing I think that is very resonant, especially with people who like listening to public radio and learning every day, is the be fiercely curious principle. Talk about be fiercely curious.
Yeah. So I've mentioned a couple of times this group of people I call the busily bored. These are people who are, you know, they're very active. They've got a lot going on. Maybe they're even doing really well in their work, but they're not asking the deeper questions. They're not, their education ended a long time ago. They're not continuing to stoke the fires of their imagination and their curiosity. And so I think it's important to not only tap into that curiosity and ask yourself, what is it about the world that I would love to know? You know, what is it that I always wanted to pursue, but I haven't because I've felt the crush of pragmatics, the constraint of time or resources, and to give yourself permission to do that. Joseph Campbell has this concept he calls the bliss station. He says everyone should find their bliss station, which is the place in their life where they're immersing themselves in the great thoughts of others. Stephen Sample called this communing with great minds, right? Mm-hmm. So you're immersing yourself in the thoughts of others. You're studying subjects that are unique to you. It doesn't matter if anyone else cares about it. It could be something that you alone are interested in, but doing that allows you to develop this amazing gray matter between your ears, right? Your mind, and it helps you start thinking systemically and asking better questions about your work. So the funny thing is that as you start doing this, even though it feels remarkably inefficient, it's incredibly effective at helping you come up with new ideas, new insights, new thoughts in some of those adjacent places. Stephen Johnson calls it pursuing the adjacent possible, right? The adjacent places around the problem and applying those insights to the work in front of you. So even though it seems really, really inefficient in the moment, it's actually very effective in helping you tap the depths of your sort of systemic thinking and apply those concepts to the work in front of you.
Well, you can be excited about practicing some of the guidelines and principles and die empty, unleash your best work every day. But what is the best way to maintain that excitement, to continue to practice those principles?
Yeah, well, we have to stay connected to other people. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people committing over time, is that as they become more successful, or as they start to think, you know, okay, I have the lay of the land here, they become closed off to others, and their world becomes a smaller and smaller set of concentric circles. We need other people in our life to help us stay engaged, to stay focused. We need people to help us set goals. I call one group in the book, I call them mirrors. These mm-hmm. are people who reflect back to us what they see, and they tell us, hey, and the question I ask people when I speak, I've done like 17 speaking engagements in the last 20 days or something crazy like that. And every time I get in front of a group of people, I ask them, I say, who in your life has the permission to speak unvarnished truth to you? Who in your life will tell you exactly what they see, even if it's not something you want to hear? Because we all need those people in our life to tell us, listen, you said you wanted to do X, but I see you doing X minus 5. That's not sufficient. Or if that's all you can do right now, let's talk about that. How can we help you get closer to where you want to be, right? But when we don't have those people in our life, over time, it's easy to veer off course because we're a world of one at that point. We don't have other people reflecting back what they see.
So you ask them questions. What do they ask you?
Yeah. So the biggest question that I get from people when they come up to me is, where do I start? Right? It seems overwhelming. And I go back to this idea that big bodies of work, big deltas, are built one small delta at a time. And so I always challenge people, listen, you have to tap your productive passion. You have to figure out what is the battle that I want to stand for today. And I don't care what your job is, right? You can have the same productive passion and be doing dozens of different kinds of jobs, because it's not about the tasks that you're doing. It's about the outcome that you're committed to through those tasks. There's a great story of Curtis Martin, the NFL Hall of Fame running back who was inducted last year. And Curtis Martin got up at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony and he said, you know, it's kind of funny I'm standing here today because I never was a football fan. I could count on one hand the number of football games I've watched my entire life. Here's a guy who's being inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame, right? But he went on to explain that on draft day, when he got the call from the Patriots and Coach Parcells said, Curtis, would you like to be a New England Patriot? He said, yes, sir. He hung up the phone. He turned around, looked at his family and said, oh my gosh, I do not want to play football, right? Amazing on draft day. But one of the people there that day was Leroy Joseph, a family friend. And he said, Curtis, hold on. You know, all those people you've always said you wanted to help, all of those children who come from broken homes, all of those families that are in tough circumstances like you grew up in, you always said you wanted to help them. Maybe football is your platform to be able to do that. And Curtis Martin went on to explain that he showed up before everybody else. He left after everybody else. He worked harder than anybody else in the game, not because he loved the tasks, not because he loved to play football, but because he had a deeper outcome, a productive passion that he was committed to. And football was his means for doing that. So I think we have to ignore this idea that out there is the perfect job, the perfect set of tasks, and instead say, what outcome am I committed to? How can I start on that today? And then as I go, I can redirect and work myself into a situation that allows me to have even more impact in that area.
Don Henry, founder and CEO of Accidental Creative. His new book is Die Empty, Unleash Your Best Work Every Day, available where books are sold. You can find a link to the book and Todd at WVXU.org, as well as details about his appearance tomorrow morning at the Madison Event Center in Covington as part of the Joseph Beth Business Lectures Series, presented by Joseph Beth Booksellers. That's WVXU.org. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate the inspiration and a little bit of guidance here in the book, Diane.
Thank you, Mark, and thanks for the great work that you guys do here.
After a short break, education consultant Jim Trelease discusses the importance of reading to your children. In this digital age, with distractions growing every day, it's more important than ever to develop avid readers. The Read Aloud Handbook and Jim Trelease, just around the corner on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.